This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to GCF. I'm Kevin.
I'm Caroline.
And we're here to have second service, actually. Woo! Hey, it's good Christian fun, colon, second service. Now, usually, these are episodes that we keep on patreon.com/goodchristianfun.
For our paying customers.
For our
We pimp
Patreon
these episodes
saints.
Only to paying people.
That's right. And there is a difference. And we are waging class warfare on our podcast listening public.
No, seriously, if you can't afford it, that's
But
cool.
Truly, good Christian, our Patreon was put together with the aim of, we always wanted to do different kinds of shows than the regular format that we do every Wednesday on the show where we talk about Christian pop culture. We wanted to have longer conversations, more in-depth conversations, different kind of formats. And on this episode today that we did with our friend, Pastor Darren McKenna, it was the best kind of episode, I think, that kind of shows what we'd like to do or what we hope to do on the show. So for this episode, we wanted to unlock it to the general listening audience and public at the same time. So you can all hear it and our existing patrons can feel screwed over. JK.
Yeah, so come take a peek behind the nasty curtain and see what's going on over in the Patreon.
So yeah, good Patreon.com/patreon. I'm keeping this in. I usually edit this shit. Damn it. Woo!
Satisfaction.
A reference to an episode next week.
Oh, boy.
But anyway, we really love this episode and really love this conversation and wanted everyone to benefit from hearing from it as we did from having it with Darren. So here it is, our conversation with Darren.
You wanted a weird fact about me.
Yeah.
I can still quote all of Gibberish. That song?
Gibberish.
That is all in, it's all in gibberish.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh yeah, they wrote.
It came on, like I was just playing it. I was like, I don't know. What was like my childhood? Yeah, this.
This is it?
This is it, yeah. Wow, you just had it right ready.
It's fast.
You knew.
Oh. Sing along, do it.
Wintoriye, paravillantinie, paravillantinie.
Plays Dorga, the Sims once.
Dorga Orpa Cycle Beer.
That's amazing. Oh my gosh.
I just, it's still there. This
oh
is like
gosh.
The thing I never knew would like stick with me my entire life.
It's Reliant K.
It's just something you learned as a
song.
Kid casually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just had like the CD thing, you know, I pulled it out, I'd look at the lyrics. And I would
so you learned, you like,
I like know that.
Looked at
I
the
could
words
probably
and everything.
Write all these words down.
This
right
is a
now.
Second scripture for you growing up.
Amazing. Yeah, the text is rich.
The text is rich. I'm always about the text. Yeah.
I think we've started. Welcome
we've
to GCF
started.
Second Service. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Caroline.
And we're here to have scribble and blah. Gibberish.
Cool. Sorry, no,
second
I support
service.
That. Yeah.
Good, great. Give me a break.
I'm sorry.
Give me a break. It's second service, and we have a pastor to talk to today.
Oh, yeah.
A real-life pastor
mm-hmm.
that wants to do this show? Well, I guess we should introduce him right now. What Enneagram type are you again? He's an Enneagram type 2. He's an Enneagram coach. And he's a pastor at New Abbey, North Hollywood. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Darren McKenna!
Hi, welcome.
Excuse me. Welcome.
Don't feel like you need to match that energy.
I mean, how do you match the energy of this song? Praise to
you can't. It can't be
I got a wobble.
Amy Grant, was that a part of it growing up?
That was. It was, yeah.
Well, thanks for doing the show, buddy.
Of course.
Under dubious circumstances.
Just, why?
Oh, just like I slid into his DMs.
Oh, we did know each other a little bit, but I slid into the DMs.
Like,
yeah.
It is still, I would rather, I think it's getting to the point now. I'm 29 years old. I think it's getting to the point now where asking someone on a date is less nerve-wracking than saying, do you want to do my podcast?
Like, especially in LA.
Yes, it's less vulnerable in a way.
And much less my Christian podcast.
Yes! It's embarrassing.
I swear it's funny.
No, but actually we swear and it's like cool. And I don't know if you know Liturgist. It's like if they were like 5% funnier and 40% stupider. That's our podcast. And it's only 5%
so
funnier.
See there?
They're very
funny. You'll have to be here for 3 hours. Yeah. See you there?
There's a cat that might break your legs if she sits on them. And
yeah, it's a lot to ask. All that to
it's
say.
A big
so
ask.
We're
so we're very happy you accepted the call.
I'm so glad to be here. Yeah.
We want to, you know, we may have some like pastoral questions for you specifically, but before we get to them, we do want to ask you about your story and your testimony and your history with faith and religion and your journey.
Oh, wow. All right.
Yeah,
you're sharing your story. Now, you're at a church where they share their story every Sunday.
That's right.
And you meet an interesting person in the congregation. Now it's
every
you.
Every damn Sunday.
Yeah. I like that part.
And now it's me.
Yeah.
That's great.
So take as much or a little time as you want. We'd love to hear it all.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, let's think. I grew up in Lilburn, Georgia.
Oh,
Lil Burn.
Okay.
I didn't stutter. It's actually L-I-L Burn.
It is?
Yeah.
Cute. Lil.
Lil Burn, which I actually had a really hard time saying as a kid. I was like, Little Burn. Like, I just didn't know what to do with, like, Lil Burn.
You're like a proper young gentleman. Yeah,
I was, you know? So that's right outside of Atlanta and right in the heart of the evangelical South.
Yeah.
We went to church as a kid. You know, all the things. Like, we weren't a particularly religious household.
Okay.
You know, we would like pray before a meal, maybe things like that. But yeah. My parents got divorced when I was 8, and then most people stopped going to the church, like most of my family.
Oh, okay.
The kids kind of stayed in there. It was, I have a brother and a sister, a mom, dad, you know, and now step family, you know, it kind of like grows out and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the kids kept going because we like had friends, and like that was like my friend group. So I grew up firmly in the church and entrenched in all of the things, the VBSs, the, I mean, you name it, like guitar Awanas. Lessons with the, yeah, Awanas, guitar lessons with the music pastor and things like that. So that was
Were you being like groomed at all to become a music pastor or a pastor in general?
Kind of, yeah.
Maybe.
By the,
I mean,
yeah,
when you're that little,
by the end of like high school, for sure,
that
was the conversation. But at that point, it's just like, yeah, this guy isn't like afraid to sing. Like, who knew it was because I was gay.
But, like,
but it's like, he likes to sing and play. So we'll like train him in that. Like, he like, do you guys remember Stick Ministry? Did you guys ever do
what
that?
What is that?
I'm scared, but continue.
There was, it's a, I actually haven't thought about this in probably 15 years. You would just get two long sticks. This is really hard. And you would just put one in each hand.
Alabama
and it was like an extension of your arms. You just held them out like that. And you would just like make a cross.
What?
Or like wave
I remember
it in the air.
That ministry kind of like was founded by a guy with brain damage.
Kevin.
<Not.
What? laughs> Oh my God. Wait, was that supposed to like accompany the worship music?
Yes. And so it was like
So it was like landing like, a plane.
Yeah, it was like landing
air
a
traffic control.
Except for you would make the occasional cross.
So instead of doing like ASL, which is a real language that could help people, just like just kind of figure it out out there.
Yeah. It was kind of like the tame version of ribbons, like the slightly
like the
less gay thing. Version of ribbons.
Yeah, because ribbons feel way more common.
Right. But so somehow ribbons like, still ended up on your sticks.
I honestly don't know. I don't know if it was a thing or if it was just someone at my show. I haven't thought about this.
We might want to investigate this a little. Have
you
Googled
had,
it, Darren?
If you're a listener that also had a stick ministry, please reach out to Darren and let him know he's not alone.
I just need
send
some
a stick
solidarity.
Across the aisle to that guy.
Well, it is funny to think about, like,
and they didn't come up with a better name either.
I know. I realized I said ministry. Stick ministry, and I was serious. That's something I should never say as a pastor right now.
Now I remember Stickley's ministry on Nickelodeon every afternoon from 3 to 5 Central Time. Stickley.
I don't know what that is.
God. He was a Christian. Come on.
I don't know what that
you
is.
You don't?
No, I don't.
Do you?
No.
There's 10 90s
I know the name, but I don't
think
I watched whatever this thing is.
Yeah. Well, I do. I definitely at every turn want to turn this into like a Christian BuzzFeed, in that it's like 100 things only Christian kids will remember from the 90s. And that was definitely one of them. Was he was a little stick man who would host the programming block weekdays on Nickelodeon. You said, oh, cool.
No, I meant it. I was like, oh, I know stuff like that.
He's kind of like Face for Nick Jr.
Remember
like,
Face
here.
I liked Face.
That guy? Yeah.
He's a little scared.
So so he was the head of the ministry.
Wait, so Ryan, rewinding a little bit, when your parents were a part of the church, were they pretty rah-rah, like gung-ho about it? And then
Not particularly. It was just like, church is a thing. It's been
that
a part of our families. Okay. We do this, you know.
Like, and when they could tell you were like getting really into it, were they like, great? Or were they like, can you calm down a little?
They were a little like, this is interesting.
Yeah, okay.
They're like,
I'm sure they had to go to a lot of your like performances.
Yeah,
or
all
just
the stick
whatever.
Ministry performances.
Stick stuff.
Like, I don't know what we're doing wrong. He just keeps bringing sticks home. I'll encourage him at whatever he wants to do, but the but stick
like, thing
is confusing.
He keeps just asking for my new pencils all the time. I love making a cross.
I just, yeah.
Because what other move is there? Oh, dude, that must be like 80% of stick ministry is just a cross, a smaller cross.
For those of you who can't see us, we're doing a lot of visually based humor with our arms right now, which is perfect for a podcast setting.
You could do a box.
But I feel
like we did that. Yeah.
Wow.
If you can dream it,
we
did it.
I know there's so much more to your story, but we will not move on from stick ministry.
I'm having trouble moving on from stick ministry currently.
I think there's a crisis happening here.
Like, this is like this. I need to bring this to my therapist.
This is a
That's
Kaiser
where I'm
Sozo
at right now.
You need to talk through this.
Sozo. Wow.
Deep seated stuff. Oh my God.
Okay. But it was definitely more of a social practice than a family culture thing.
Exactly. Yeah. It was our family. It was like what we did together for a while. And then it was kind of what I did by myself, but because I had friends there.
Yeah.
And
yeah. It was kind
of fun. I learned guitar there. And I remember they would get us to lead worship for VBS for the younger kids time I was in high school. So I'm just this kind of, not as a big, kind of rotund kid, if you will.
Okay.
Just like awkwardly for a VBS.
I can't.
For a Hawaiian-themed VBS, just wearing like Hawaiian t-shirts in a lei. There's a picture of me with like cargo shorts and like flip-flops and on stage like playing guitar and singing my heart out for all of these like, you know, fifth graders and things.
That's awesome. Was,
you know, that kind of church. I don't know.
Yeah. Did you have mentors at that time who were like, getting you riled up at all? Or
not really, like no.
Riled up is an interesting term.
I like saying riled up you for need... the Lord.
Oh, I see. Yeah. That's just generally riled up.
My mentor was Jesus.
Okay. Okay. I guess Jesus y'all didn't have a direct line.
I mean, but some of us did.
I can tell.
And those people became pastors. Your shepherd.
And here we are.
Okay, so then what happened?
So I do that whole thing in high school, and then in college I get involved with crew, and that was kind of my
You did crew? Yes, yep. All 4 years.
Yep. I did it for like 3.5-ish years, 4-ish years, and that was a trip. I was all into like Calvinism and kind of like these super, what I understand now to be super conservative. For me back then, though, like it was just like, this is what real Christians talk
about.
Yeah,
it was just like the right way. And it was like an intellectual way to talk about Christianity.
It was like I grew up in this like culture and the social fabric where it was just like, oh, this is how you build healthy relationships. Mm-hmm. And this is where you find your communal identity. Mm-hmm. And you practice faith this way. Like all actually really embodied and helpful things. Mm-hmm. And then when I got to college, I'm like, oh, well, now that I'm in college, the natural thing is to intellectualize.
Yes.
And to intellectualize means you have to be a 5-point Calvinist and you need to preach the gospel in every sermon.
Yes. You know, like, yes.
And so all went to the David Platt, the Francis Chan.
You were like, radical. I was very radical.
Oh, I was so radical.
Yeah. And with a crazy love.
Yeah, crazy love. That was it.
Crazy love.
That book
huge.
Changed my life. Yes. That was like my intro into that. I'm like, oh my
You're
God.
Like, oh my God, I've been doing it all wrong.
I've been doing this wrong.
We need to.
Have I done my Francis Chan impression on this podcast?
Go for it.
I'm just asking if I've done it.
I don't remember. I want you to do it though.
It's just like, I don't know. What are we even doing here? I think it's actually more simple than we think it
He's
is.
Like that?
Oh. I just want to be faithful. It's like we're walking this high wire. And I don't know. I think the gospel is actually more simple.
Like the facial expressions right now.
He's so plaintive. Yeah, because I remember in crew, like crew for me was also just a way of keeping myself like in Christianity and like staying safe almost, if that makes sense. Because I grew up going to Christian school and all that stuff, and I wanted to like keep my faith. But then, yeah, but it did become a lot about like the right thinking and the right behavior, which was mission trips all the time, forever.
Evangelism
all the time.
Initiative evangelism.
Yeah, being intentional and like, and a big thing in crew, I don't know if it was for you this way, but they were like really into all of us getting involved in other clubs or things like that, or like sororities or sports or intramurals or whatever, so that we were like, getting into the gospel out there like 24/7.
Yeah, our chapter wasn't quite that. That was around. Like there were people who like thought that.
Yeah.
For me, I did theater a lot like growing up. So I'm a huge like Broadway kid. Tonys are coming up June 9th. Everyone tune in.
Okay.
It's gonna be a good one.
I'm checking.
You having
it out.
A watch party, bro?
am I having a watch party, bro?
This is like
we'll talk.
This is like a character who like loves the Tonys but still wants.
But still has to
cling on to his masculinity.
Yeah, bro. There's actually a great sketch about that. If people watch the Tonys like they watch like the draft or something.
Oh, yeah.
There's a great like YouTube sketch.
Oh,
you
think Hadestown's going to sweep this year, bro?
Oh, fuck. Come on. He was wrong.
Beetlejuice is washed.
Okay, so you were involved in
theater. So I was involved in theater, and I actually felt like I needed to step away from theater so I could be, like, more holy.
Was theater an idol?
It was an idol. Okay. It was my connection to, like negative things here.
Because we've talked about that a little bit with other people who became actors or, like, went into entertainment who were strongly Christian, where, like, it was sort of a double-edged sword of, like, you really liked theater and you liked being on stage and people were, like, giving you more and more opportunity. Yep. But then it was also, like, maybe you like the limelight a little too much, you know, or like you're doing it for yourself and like your own fame.
Yeah.
And you're like, intrinsically, yes. So I don't know what to
actually,
do.
This is what I'm made to do.
I have to be have attention. But I like it. Yeah. And so for a lot of people, it would like you have to play this game of like, it's not, but it's for God. It's not really this.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a thing.
Plus theater people are just rabid.
They are sinful.
Sinners.
Yes,
they are.
Yes, we
you know
are.
What happens
we
at
are.
A cast party?
I know, yeah.
I'll give you two hints. It's a lot of singing 525,600 minutes and cuddling.
And too much
platonic
touch.
Cuddling.
Can anybody tell me where the lie is?
Where is it? I don't see it. I'm looking.
I see it nowhere.
Little detective. Gosh, we had club cuddle in high school. Anyway, we called Clubble.
I want to go wretch.
I know. Anyway.
Oh, God.
But you did theater mostly in college, it sounds like?
High school and college. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So
what
I was
were the
involved.
Roles? What were you starring in?
Yeah,
the Footloose, the musical, Seussical.
Seussical.
Really?
I was Horton.
I was JoJo.
Oh.
Oh, we would have been together.
Because there's so much to
and
talk
after,
about.
And after this podcast, we'll do a live rendition of Alone in the Universe.
Please.
Featuring Caroline and Darren.
Alone
and I'll cuddle
universe.
With myself.
Just like high school, somehow in the club cuddle, Kevin was still member
one. He was the
one.
President and vice
member
president and treasurer and secretary.
Kept the minutes, all 525,600 of them.
Oh man!
Oh gosh!
Jokes are flying.
Yep, they are flying.
Okay, sorry. Well, what were your parts? Oh, you played Horton. You played
Did Horton. God, what else was I? I was in Urinetown, the musical.
Oh, yeah, Urinetown.
Yeah, I was Caldwell B. Gladwell, the villain there. I was in, gosh, Jekyll and Hyde in college. I was the father of, like, Jekyll's, like, lover.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah.
So fun
the famous
like
father-in-law.
Yeah, the famous father-in-law. That one wasn't. I should have gone to high school. I had more leads. Yeah. Like, why did I go for that? Like,
I played a tree.
I was the third tree from
big
the
credits.
Right.
Yeah, it was an extra. I was a butler here. Anyway, that's great. So you felt like you had to step away from it because it was like
I had to step away from
you away
it.
From
and
God.
So around that time, I was processing my sexuality for the first time. Like, I knew that I was attracted to men. And I guess if for those of you who don't know, I'm bisexual. But I knew I was attracted to men in high school. But I didn't really start wrestling with it too much. Like, it was just kind of there in high school.
Yeah.
You know, like, but...
Was part of it like, oh, but I'm attracted to women, so this is probably just...
Yeah,
like,
it was kind of like, if this is there, then this is, like, I don't know. It was a very weird thing. It's a very weird road to walk down as a bisexual.
Well, also, like, bisexual hasn't been, like, a thing for a long time. Like, people, I think, well, especially when we were growing up, it was like, you're either gay or you're straight.
Right.
So if you weren't 100% either way, it was like, I'll just ignore one side.
So I would always say gay. I thought I was gay because, like, you're attracted to men, so, like, that's what that means. Mm-hmm. And... But I always like knew that didn't fully fit, even though it was also true. It just was a weird thing. So college, I started like dealing, like processing that. And remember, I'm in kind of like conservative kind of land. So I found an online forum for same-sex attracted Christians.
Yep.
And I was a part of that ministry for like 3-ish years
or
so. Super active on these forums. And
the forum was from the perspective that this is
that this is
thorn in your side that you need to get rid of. This
well
is
same
like
sex attraction gives it away. Right. They never say gay, they never say whatever.
SSA.
But that's like how I mean you can explain this better, but that's how like a lot of conservative Christians explain, like, if you have a sexuality that isn't within heterosexuality, they're like, well, you have same-sex attraction.
Right. It's something you have, not something you are.
Exactly.
It's a way to distance yourself
from it.
It's
a behavior you have that you can change.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And so I was, and so the idea of this forum was, it was more kind of like a support forum. So it was like people, like everyone was in the same boat there, and it was with the ministry, and it was actually really helpful because that was actually the first place to encourage me to like come out to my friends, which who knew that like self-disclosure can heal you, right?
Yeah.
Things like that. So they weren't, there wasn't very much at the time, there wasn't much like, oh yeah, you can change and become ex-gay. I now know some people who went through the program that I was like attached to. They were kind of in the in-person ministry who kind of had that experience. But from online, it was more just like, hey, don't like act out. I'm putting in air quotes.
Act out.
And it's such a
like
such
an eighth grader who's like at a birthday party.
Don't color on the walls now, son. That's what it
don't
feels
act
like.
Out.
It was such an interesting like subculture that forum, because like there's rules like you couldn't share like any identifying information with anybody because they didn't want you to like quote unquote act out with each other.
So it was like SSAA.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So that was
it was
like
anonymous. So we
just
all had
to keep
handles.
You from ever linking up with each other.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Well, because otherwise it'd be like going to an AA meeting in a bar or something. Yeah. Right?
Would it? It would have been
in
like
a way,
I need
though.
A friend. To
well,
like
yeah,
talk
right.
to someone
yes,
in person.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, that's their mentality. I'm just like, that sucks so bad. Like you had to do this online because like if you got together, you're just gonna kiss.
Well, and they had an in person group that had rules where like you couldn't like give each other's numbers out, you couldn't like use last names.
You had to use leather masks the whole time with little zippers for the mouth holes.
And that's where we get that kink.
Yes. Yeah, it's weird how that
it's from
work.
Anonymity for our own purity.
Yeah.
That isn't that wild? I mean, it's like, it's horrible, but it's kind of laughable too that like just you're so drawn to each other that they had to make so many rules just to keep you from like holding hands or something on accident because attraction is inevitable.
Right. It was a crazy time.
Do you feel like there were moments in any of that discussion in that group that like helped you maybe become like embrace your identity
100%.
More or like help you feel a little less alone or something?
So I have a very complicated relationship with that time in my life because I see it as so necessary and it was so helpful when you grow up in a world where it's you're either gay or you're straight and the gay people are bad and they're likely going to do drugs and, you know, contract a disease and they're wild partiers, yada, 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 all these things.
Because what time frame is this?
This is, I graduated high school in 2007. So,
okay.
Yeah. So this is, you know, I'm growing up in the early 2000s kind of. late 90s hearing about gay. That's when my consciousness around what gay means is in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah. And I feel like this is going to be, in retro, well, it already is, such like a weird tract of time to grow up in terms of cultural norms and acceptances. Because even if it was like 10 years prior, it feels like homophobia was a little more, like homophobia was so mainstream until a year ago, it feels like.
Yeah.
And like way more hateful in stuff you see from the 80s and 90s in media. And then just in the way it's communicated and fear mongering stuff like Reagan and the AIDS crisis and all that. Yeah. So it's interesting, I feel like, for kind of our generation to grow up in that tract of time where you definitely had gay friends or you knew about it. And maybe there's a lot of stigma that was kind of eroded from it. At the same time, it definitely isn't, even now in our lifetimes in 2019, where it is, where it's like, let's contend with this in a serious way. And you actually do have to have like a certain amount of respect in public space that just wasn't demanded before. And so you probably, the joke I've made to Caroline before is like, I get misoriented constantly. Like it happened a couple of days ago.
A couple days ago?
Oh, so you're gay, right? And it always feels weird to correct
well,
someone.
Well,
you
like, did slide into my DMs.
I did.
And
I said,
that is
you
what
up
the gays
for
do.
A pod.
You got his number. And these are the rules.
Right. And it used to be a lot more loaded to get misoriented when I was growing up because it was like, you know, especially when you're a kid and you don't even have like a full security in your own sexuality. But like the older you get, it's definitely become less of a like an insult or a pejorative.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's more like, oh, they think I'm neat.
You know what I mean? Oh, they think I have good skin.
Yes.
And I dress
like
well.
Good style and a lot of
together.
Opinions.
Yeah.
And probably intelligent and probably a good singer.
And like a wide breadth of knowledge in various worlds.
Yeah.
I don't just care about sports.
So early 2000s when it was happening for you in college, it does feel like kind of like a weird historical midpoint for a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, I sit in that middle ground for a lot of it. I mean, most of our generation does, really.
Yeah.
And also it's different, like, here in L.A. And L.A. was having a different conversation than Lilburn in, you know, 2000.
They were.
Right? And so, like, that's another thing to think about is, like, I was in kind of, at the time I was, like, in elementary, middle, and high school, it was still, like, kind of a rural moving towards suburb kind of area. Mm-hmm. And so that transition happened over my lifetime. It became a full-fledged suburb. Yeah. But still, it was kind of, it just had those roots of, like, you know, a little small town. Mm-hmm. Which,
where did you go to college, by the way?
I went to the Georgia Institute of Technology.
Okay.
GIT. Yeah. GT. Oh. GT. There's no I. Get out of here.
Get her done.
Yeah. Get her done.
But yeah, it's interesting that you did kind of fall between. So you said you have a complicated relationship at that time.
Yeah, because it, like, they encouraged me and they're like, no, you need to have people who know all of you.
That's
so
cool.
Wow. What a beautiful thing that I still tell people they need now. And they held the same kind of like patience and space I needed. Mm-hmm. Like that I still have to give people before they can come out. Mm-hmm. Like I need to be working with people when I'm pastoring someone who's queer. Like I have to give them all the space and time to work out whatever the hangups are that they need and not force them into anything, which this group allowed me to do, you know?
Nice.
I went to a conference with them, the Exodus conference, if you guys have
Exodus Ministries,
Exodus Ministries, like now, which is infamously like
splatted.
Messed up. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I mean it's done. Yeah. But I went to a conference with them and that was my first time just being around all like queer people and like where they knew who I was, I knew where they were, no one was worried.
What is the energy of that thing like?
It's
a community gathering.
It's a weird energy.
But like also suppression, but also that's our whole connection in a big way. Tell us what it's like. I'm just guessing.
You're hitting it. It's weird because some people come to it forced by their parents and are forced like in having so much internal trauma around their understanding of sexuality and identity. So like they're bringing that energy into the room.
Yeah.
There are some people because of that actually do really like dangerous and probably practice unsafe things like, you know, sex with people they don't know, unprotected, mm-hmm. not knowing status, and you know, like mm-hmm. they're acting out, quote unquote. I don't know another language. That's how they used to say it.
Yeah,
I need to think about how to reorient that language.
They're just hooking up.
They're hooking up.
Yeah, at this conference.
So funny. Well, like yeah, in general.
Amazing.
Yeah,
yeah,
of course. And but like also just like doing things like meeting random people and mm-hmm. you know like. More unsafe sex practices, right. you know, like that we have a lot more consciousness in the queer community around now yeah. of how to like what protection is. We have PrEP, we have things that we can use for like safety. And so like you have these people who are kind of doing these things that are kind of scary to everyone else. They're like, oh my God, that's the guy who went to that bathhouse that one time.
Oh, or,
you
I
know,
see.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes, like, I see what you're saying. Of like, they actually do this.
They
stuff,
do the thing. They like, fit the stereotype because
level.
Of their trauma. Yeah. You know, like, and
this is such a sad analog.
Yeah, it is.
But it must sort of feel like prison in a way, because it's like everyone here is condemned by this like framework, and everyone has like a different thing. Well, I'm doing time for this and I'm doing time for that, and that's the thing everyone has in common.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I see what you're saying. Yeah, there I at least where you're saying where everyone in there has an understanding that they're condemned.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want to say prison like it's a place like, you know, there are maybe there are like, you know, psychological bars around all of us, maybe we can yeah. do that, but it's that idea of we all know we're messed up. Mm-hmm. And so we assume that like we all share like this like deep sense of humanity and like a bad sense, like humanity is a bad thing. Mm. And that was like the biggest like change I had to make, was realizing that like, oh, my humanity is a gift from God and yeah. humanity is good.
This
like
is good.
This
yes.
is a good thing. But yeah. even like if you want to go super literalist biblical, like humans were good before they were inherently sinful. Like our sure. original intent was goodness.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily follow all of that theology,
yeah.
but like even when you just look at the text, the first thing it says about humans is that they are good.
They're good.
Before yeah. anything else happens. And
yeah.
so we have to reclaim that sense of goodness.
Man, that's like the, I'm getting ahead a little bit, but that's like the biggest thing I worked on now or changed now. And I feel like it was the biggest thing I picked up when I was in crew. It was just like, what is it? Abject sinfulness or whatever.
Yeah, depravity.
Total depravity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Total depravity. And like whatever I want, I have to question because it's probably bad
yep.
and probably misleading or whatever. And so, and that bleeds into everything in your
yeah.
life and everything. And so I can imagine like, let alone sexuality that's
right.
already like messy in Christianity and then condemned and then it's abject depravity
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah.
And then having to reclaim like, it's beautiful. I don't know. That seems wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would yep. be really tough.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, it really fits. So the narrative around sexuality really fits in with like kind of conservative, like totally depraved
yes.
mindsets, right?
Yes.
It's like it's the clearest, like, I don't know, incarnation of total depravity is that even my sexuality is inherently broken.
Mm.
So those go hand in hand. I actually know quite a few very conservative, like gay Christians. And like, I don't get it. Because I've had to do some different kind of work in seminary and think through kind of like the implications of a lot of these things, and pastorally, like there's a theological issue, there's a pastoral issue, there's an ethical issue. There's so many conversations that I've had to put myself in to think differently.
Yeah.
But it's actually very real. A lot of the queer community is still very theologically conservative, because it just makes sense with the script they were handing with sexuality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But would those conservative queer people identify as queer or as same-sex attracted?
Oh, I'm talking the ones that would even identify as queer.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's
like,
very interesting.
Like they're affirming of their sexuality
with.
At this point,
mm-hmm.
but they still maintain a very conservative framework, which mm. surprised me because I did a lot of the framework stuff before I ever affirmed my sexuality.
Right.
So like I actually did a lot of theological work, and we can talk about this in a second.
Yeah.
Kind of in the back, you know, back of my head, just kind of pretending I was the same person up front, realizing that everything about how I was viewing God and the Bible and the world was shifting. And then I just kind of self-disclosed and allowed people to see that, oh, I'm actually different than you mm-hmm. thought, you know? Yeah. A lot of people do that self-disclosure first and accept that because they've learned that's what they need. Mm. And then there's still a lot of theology that hasn't kind of worked out what it means. And I'm not saying that everyone's going to have my, like, theological progressivism or whatever you want to call it
right.
When they get to the other side of it. But a lot of people haven't done that theological work as well.
Yeah. I feel like you must. Like, it has to catch up eventually because it just doesn't really fit.
I hope so.
I hope so.
Otherwise, I agree.
Yeah, you just always have this like cognitive dissonance, I think, about what you're doing in your head.
But you know, at the same time, this is what I do find lovely about like individual identity stuff is the idea that I think at least everyone in this room can agree on in the sense that nothing is binary mm-hmm. in any one way. Mm-hmm. So you see this in so many movements where monoculture doesn't really exist. So if you say all gay people are like this, it's not quite true, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not, oh, yeah, so you're gay, so this means X, Y, Z, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
It's like, maybe it means that, or, like, sometimes more often than not it would mean that. But
right.
But there's still, to me, there's still something lovely about, like, the value of difference
yeah.
within that, and that individuals are still very much individuals.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember the first person to point that out to me was a straight pastor friend of mine, actually, when I was processing some shit that went down at my old church. I remember as he was getting to know me and pastoring me well through a really difficult season and pastoring or like talking about my future and all these kinds of things, I've never forgotten. He said that gay Christians are not a monolith. And I was like, oh, you're right. I don't have to be anything to be a gay Christian. I can just be myself and be a gay Christian.
Interesting.
And that was like, this is like 4 years ago, and that was such a mind fuck, honestly.
That makes so much sense to me, though, because I feel like, I don't know, like a lot of queer gay culture is presented as like, we are like this, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And it's a solidarity thing.
Yep.
Like, I think it's a survival thing yep. for everyone, and it
totally.
Makes total sense.
And it's great for comedy bits and things
yeah,
like
exactly.
that. And we love to laugh at trauma.
Yeah.
Nanette
and it's
taught
like,
us that.
It's how you like, yeah, you keep each other like connected and safe, and we're like this. But of course, there's a lot of people who are like, actually, I don't really love going to parties that
right.
much.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
I know so
I
many boring
to.
Gays, y'all.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, like, I actually don't love Judy yeah. Garland, so I don't know what we're doing. Yeah, but I feel like I have to, you know, so
yeah.
So that must have been kind of nice to be like, oh yeah, I can still be a gay Christian and also
like
be
whatever
a lot of,
the
yeah,
hell
or
I want
a bisexual
to be.
Christian
right.
or be whatever, and yeah, and I don't have to like fit either side.
Exactly.
So. Like I can be a white and not listen to Keith Urban.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
and I'm so proud
you.
Of you. You're very
thank
brave.
Bro, are you even white?
Gosh, only barely.
Extremely brave.
Thank you. Thank you for coming out to us in that way.
No,
thanks for
honor.
Trusting me.
It's an honor.
I feel honored with your story.
I almost said because my go-to white was Taylor Swift, but I didn't listen to a lot of Taylor Swift.
And she's like
and
particularly
like the ultimate,
this week particularly
know.
Problematic Taylor Swift.
Baby.
Wait,
yes.
what happened this week?
Well, just I mean, not literally problematic, maybe just musically problematic with
the
me or whatever it's called.
No, the video like
oh,
where
what does she do?
Oh, do we want to go there?
I yes, want to go
do
there.
You want to go there?
I can talk about this all day.
Essentially, you kind
America.
Of look at her new video that just came out.
Yes.
And it mirrors a lot of Beyonce
Homecoming?
Is it Homecoming? Yeah, it was Homecoming. Right?
Well, they were talking about, at the Billboard
the
Awards.
The Billboard Awards.
Billboard Awards.
Yes,
there it is.
She with had, like, a band come out, like a marching band.
Yeah.
We were like, really?
And it, like, all even, like, the color scheme of, like, pink and, like,
and
where she, like...
And, yeah.
It was just like one of those things where like Black Twitter, which is a beautiful thing that I learned
man.
So much from. It was just like our culture is not for sale. Like, sorry, like
you
the
can't
things
have it.
You
it
can't
doesn't
just
work.
Take whatever we do and then monetize it for your own benefit.
I know. It just feels so tone deaf. I will say that like the side by side screenshots, it was like just like a tsunami of black excellence versus like two Energizer bunnies snares.
It was.
Oh man.
It was like
so
you
funny.
Put them next to each other and like it's not the same.
Oh,
so
boy.
Strange.
That's
yeah.
funny. I talked at length about this with my friend last night about like, what is she doing? This color scheme is wrong. This aesthetic is bad. It's dated. It's weird. She should have done this. She should be country right now. Like, we went on and on about it. Anyway,
I mean,
I could
who knew I could miss a snake? But I do.
I don't.
Right now.
I don't. It was such a misstep.
Anyway. Reputation is mostly good songs and like a handful of bad ones.
You made me do.
No.
Delicate is one of her best songs ever.
Delicate's good.
Yes.
Yeah. But everything else.
No, I think New Year's Day is great. We don't have time anyway.
Well, this is another episode.
I'm more of an Ari fan myself, though. That's right.
I get that.
I'm on the spectrum from Taylor to Beyonce. I'm at Ari.
Okay.
I'm Rihanna.
Well, okay, you're Rihanna.
Yeah.
Okay.
That makes sense because Ariana Grande, in a way, is every race. And it can kind of be conversant in all of them.
She does kind of just manage.
She can be a basic white girl licking donuts.
And then throw her wig, I
guess. That's right.
Jeez,
I'm snatched. Ooh, yeah. I don't know.
Okay, but I'm not done with this. So Ariana Grande.
Oh, my God.
I think she's like definitely one of the, if not the most talented like singer right now of our time. She's amazing. All of her music is great right now. I love it. I do think she's maybe a bad person.
Is anyone not a bad person?
And I'm curious about, as a fan... Oh, shut up, Kevin. I'm talking about... But like... let me play devil's advocate. Shut up over there. But do you think maybe she is like a bad friend? This is the impression I have of her.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I don't want to believe it about her.
Okay.
But also, let me tell you why I love Ari.
Okay.
Because she...
Thank you,
bless you.
Good job.
Bless you, Kevin.
Good job.
God will surely like bless you and your children.
I'm like the GIMP engineer that can't speak, but plays whatever you need me to.
But she actually was on Broadway before and was trained to be a Broadway singer before she went into this.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And she did a lot of work in with my favorite Broadway composer, Jason Robert Brown, who she was on this show. She was in a show called 13, worked with Jason Robert Brown. He was her voice coach.
Is he the guy who did Last 5 Years?
Yes.
Oh, isn't he problematic?
Is he?
He got sued for that show.
Oh, yes.
For
yes.
like defamation stuff.
Yeah, defamation
stuff.
I'll
save it for the Tony Watch
party. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah. No, he... Yeah, well, that's a whole other conversation. But anyways, he's like one of my favorite composers right now.
I see.
And like he'll do shows, and one time he did a show and he brought Ari out as a surprise.
Wow.
And everyone got a surprise Ari concert singing Broadway songs. And
I think it didn't...
This is
also part of it too, is like she is such a theater kid at heart. And so when she turns off, like, I'm the coolest bitch in the world, and then it's just like, yeah, listen to me. That's why I'm like, ugh, God.
Fair.
Too much.
I concede your point.
Every race.
But I'm just curious, like, how you love her, and then also be like, but you kind of shirk responsibility sometimes. But also, I think she's amazing. Like, she's like always been a big advocate for the queer community, and she's like getting people to register to vote at her concerts. And of course, like the Manchester thing happened with her, and she like figured out how to do that gracefully. And it didn't happen to her, it happened to all the children that died there, not her, but anyway,
right? Yeah,
thank you.
It's the conversation around like literally everyone is problematic except for Beyonce. I actually don't think she's problematic in the least bit.
I don't think there
But like is. There we don't have anyone that we love that isn't problematic, and that's just the reality. Like
I think we need to embrace that more too.
And
I'm a big advocate of like everyone should be.
I'm not saying she's problematic. I'm just saying she's,
I don't know.
Not
being a bitch to your friends is kind of problematic in my book. Like,
problematic,
you know,
feels so political. This is just like, I don't like you.
Yeah.
well, problematic feels like a value judgment that is, it's like whether someone deserves platform or voice or not.
Yeah, or if they're like, ethical or something.
Yeah, and being like a bad friend isn't necessarily.
Yeah, this is, this is petty. Yeah. Like, this
it's
is low hanging, whatever.
It's
I'm
hard.
Just gossiping.
Like, should she have her albums taken? Like, let's burn our CDs because Ariana didn't respond to the text or something. Like,
she can ruined you imagine? She made my New Year's party about her.
And I think that is like the this is like the shift in like how we see like rock heroes and musical heroes and stuff too, because before it was like rock and roll's dangerous, like Jerry Lee Lewis killed a guy and married his 12-year-old cousin, and Keith Richards snorted cocaine off of dead sex workers in hotel rooms, and now it's like Ariana's kind of a bitch, right? like it's true. Gone from like actual crime and like prison and jail time to like, she's a petty.
Yeah. Well, she also did the Japanese tattoo that would, you know, yeah, like didn't actually say that. So, you know, like it's, people get shit wrong and, you know, I get if people want to cancel her for that, like that's particularly offensive to certain communities and people, but... You know,
anyway,
everyone's that. There's plenty of things you can cancel me for, I'm sure, if we looked hard enough. So.
I think so. I was scrolling through your old Twitter looking for tweets that were cancelable worthy.
So let's be clear. You love.
Did you say let's be queer?
I meant to say let's be clear.
It sounded like you hesitated. I appreciate that.
Let's be clear. Don't you want to hear a podcast hosted by Barack Obama where he talks about leaders in the LGBTQ community called Let Me Be Queer?
Let me be clear here. That's it.
The long road.
No, all right.
It feels a little bit like a sympathy laugh coming from my left.
I feel like I burned him earlier, and I'm trying to give him something.
Oh, come on! That's worse! F you. Second service is the part where we fight.
Where we fight a lot.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers. Aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Let's get back to Darren's story.
Yeah, Darren, let's talk about you.
That's what we were talking about.
That's right. Wow. I don't even remember how that came
out. No, we were talking about Exodus stuff.
We were talking about how did Ariana
Grande...
Okay, so
we incepted to Ariana Grande.
I'm just so grateful. So I actually like stepped out of that world myself. I entered it myself just because, like, again, I just knew what was the right thing is not be gay. And then I was like, it's kind of weird that all these people talk about is sexuality. It's like their life is one dimensional.
That's the whole thing.
And so I was like, I'm going to like live the rest of my life, you know, and I'm just, just kind of went along. And so I went on staff at a church when I graduated. So fun fact, I have an engineering degree.
Wow.
From Georgia Tech. And so of course I went and became an apprentice to a college pastor right out of college.
Oh boy.
Why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So, but it was a church that I found a lot of belonging in, and I loved. They weren't as intellectually focused as Crew. It was a very I would say kind of moving out of the headspace and intellectualizing all faith. in moving into more experiential and kind of emotional kind of things. It was, you know, a little bit of a charismatic bent to it, and some worship culture. It's a little church that where the song that you may have heard of, Good Good Father, came from.
They wrote that song?
Yeah, our worship pastor and our like house band House Fires wrote that song. And
ooh, I'm imagining, by the way, this like emotional intellectual spectrum, the two totems of which being on the emotional, experiential, kind of charismatic, on that far end you have Hillsong. And then the far intellectual, it's like Dr. John Piper or something.
Yeah, exactly. Because
it feels like, I feel like John Piper could do an Ask Pastor John about like why reckless love is bad or something.
Yeah, I think he did
He probably did.
But you know what that also like reminds me of? Like it's almost kind of a male-female spectrum too. Like at least I felt that way in college too. Like the men in the crew thing were so into John Piper and Francis Chan. And like the women were reading that too, but they were doing other stuff and were into like, I don't know, who were the women that were big? Van Camp.
Beth Moore,
yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? The one who like writes very poetic-y prose, and she has like a Dutch-sounding name.
Emily Van Camp?
No, from it's not Revenge? That. Someone knows it out there. But anyway, like, my friends were reading that stuff and Reckless Love and like that stuff.
And Voskamp. No.
And Voskamp. That's what it is. Thank you. Yes.
I was like, wait.
And Voskamp and like various things. And then the guys were like hardcore really into Calvinism and like really loved that stuff. And it's just so interesting like how those kind of bled into each other and also were like on that spectrum a little bit.
Well, yeah, as a young man, fresh out of college, were you craving more emotion or rules?
That's really interesting. I think I was craving less rules. Yeah. I was craving emotion. I was craving, I don't know, more of life than just like thinking and being right. It gets tired after a while, unless you're certain personality types. You know, some people can do that forever. Mm-hmm. I am not that personality type. So after a little season in that, I'm like, deuces, you know?
Yeah.
And like, what's funny is I still like assumed that that was the right way to think when you did engage that way. I just wanted to engage that way less. And so it was really my journey of starting to pastor and be around people who thought differently. Our pastors were much more diverse theologically than I had ever experienced before in pastoral leadership. And I started to get into real pastoral conversations with people about their actual lives, not like this, like sitting from, you know, behind and just like dictating what people do without thinking about how it affects their lives. Yeah. It's like, this is a real conversation around like someone who was thinking about going independent from his parents as a college student because they wanted him to kind of come home and live in this like family oriented Christian community with lots of rules. And he was like, I want to get a degree and I want to have like some independence. And so now if you were to take the Bible super literally in there, you probably would be like, no, you should be with your family.
Because you must obey your parents.
Right. You must obey your parents. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that whole culture is so weirdly obsessed with the family unit looking, you know, with like two or three kids and a mother and a father, right? And so to uphold that is upholding scripture somehow, right? And so even if it's not about obeying your parents, you must uphold family structures.
Yes, and the family is the foundation
on the family.
Of the church.
I was extremely focused on the
family. Yeah, isn't that funny how the family, it's still like, I mean, family's important, but it's, it's like idolized.
It's so idolized. Yeah. And so like the actual pastoral conversation looked like, What is happening in your life? What do you need for your whole life? What are your parents asking? Is this fair for you? Is this fair to them that you're making this decision or having these conversations? Like, that's real pastoral work. Yeah. And then, okay, now in light of that, how do we move forward? Yeah. And so just nothing can be super intellectualized, right?
Yeah.
When it comes down to, in between you and one other person. Mm-hmm. And so between that and, again, just seeing, it was super helpful in that church, seeing some pastors, like, read more broadly. I heard some of them read Rob Bell. I know. I just had to pause for dramatic effect.
I just peed myself.
We often reminisce about how that was like,
oh my God,
the either like the most controversial thing or the worst thing you could possibly do.
I feel like it was like kind of underground thing. Like, you know, this guy's kind of a whack job, but like, I don't know, something in here is kind of helpful.
Yeah. And so like that wasn't like necessarily kosher at our church, if you will, but like the pastors were reading it anyways.
Yeah, they wanted
to
like take in the opinion.
Yeah, and people were listening to Brian Zond preach, which he became my favorite preacher for like 2 years. Wow. I loved him, and which just opened me up to new voices theologically, which then opened me up to like, oh, maybe everything I thought about sexuality isn't right. And well, now I'm mentoring this queer student, and I can't like in good conscience say like, oh yeah, suppression, it's really going to work out well for you.
That's an interesting dynamic.
You know,
yeah.
And you have to give him advice that you yourself
needed.
Are like right. Not it, quite
exactly.
sure of.
And
yeah.
This was a student I had been in relationship with before. Like he knew that I was also queer, and but like, you know, like we knew that we had similar stories, and I just got to the point where I could no longer say like, yeah, you should just keep doing the same things we've been talked about.
Wow.
We've been talking about actually just stay in community, like stay connected to people. Mm-hmm. And I just believe God is big enough to like work this out the way that it needs to be worked out. And like, I trust you. And I was like, go on this date. And this is like, and I had never done that for myself. And I'm sitting there and I'm like,
oh my
yeah,
God.
Just do this, you know, like, super pastoral and authoritative. Uh-huh. And then he leaves the coffee shop and I'm like, I want you to have
what now. Was that like for that student? Were they like, what are you telling me to do right now? Or were they thank you?
I think they were just thank you. They're like, yeah. Okay. You know, like there was, it wasn't, I don't think I had such like an authoritative place in their life where they would only do what I said. Mm-hmm. Like it was very much just a mutual relationship of working this out, just recognizing I was a pastor,
that's
you know?
Cool. Yeah.
That is so powerful too. And yeah. I can't imagine when you're in that queer space as well, just have someone with a modicum of authority say, I think you're fine.
Yeah, like
just,
I know.
Just
right?
Honestly, that
that's
affirmation of like,
yeah.
I think you're okay.
Yeah.
It's happened a few times to me where it's just like, I am, and it's such a
yeah.
shift. I think people take that for granted.
Yeah.
How much that relation, came back to Kirk Cameron, colon, connect,
yep.
but how much that relationship can dictate belief.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In that sense.
And like, I've heard this mentioned at New Abbey too, of like, kind of sometimes you just need that person in authority to give you permission, even mm-hmm. though you shouldn't, you know, like you should be able to decide that for yourself eventually, but like,
yep.
you still really crave someone.
Yeah.
Who and, taught you to be like, it's okay.
And I actually had, like, for me to fully... So, like, at that point, I realized my theology was different.
Yeah,
you know, like...
Well, there it is.
And I was like, and that was, like, the first time, like, it was, like, out there. I'm like, oh, shit. and it was, you know, like, I dated a woman after that who I really loved. And I thought that I would actually be able to not have the conversation. So, mm-hmm. there was that whole thing. This, mm-hmm. like, weird space that bisexual... people operate in of like maybe you and I think a lot are not forced to have the conversation about what it means.
Yeah.
And I just realized it was still killing me from the inside out, especially in as a pastor in a space that could demean other queer people or could oppress other queer people. Like it was eating me up inside that I wasn't working that out in my actual life and integrating myself.
Were you afraid at all that you would be kicked out? Did you lose your job?
Oh,
that
yeah.
parents would get mad at you? Like all that
spoiler
stuff?
Alert.
Oh, here we go. Okay.
A couple of those happened.
Okay. Let's talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that happened and I start going on and that was when I really started theologically diving into like what do the texts actually say about sexuality and
the clobber passages some people call them. Yeah.
Yes, and coincidentally, that's what I'm teaching this afternoon is teaching about the clobber
oh,
passages
no way.
To a group of queers. Actually,
cool.
so it's
oh,
going to
yeah.
be pretty fun.
Yeah.
Did you read that book about it?
Which one?
Declobbered,
Unclobbered. Yeah, yeah. Colby Martin.
Yeah,
it's a good one.
That was a really. I think I've talked about it before, but that was a really helpful book of like. If you want to go down that road, and you can go down a road of interpretation of like, man, I don't care, whatever.
Yeah, right.
Or
yeah.
you can do the thing of like, okay, let's play the game. Yep. If abomination means this, then this means this,
uh-huh.
and,
yep.
and yeah. do the math of it. But oh, yeah.
So. I think it's kind of like sweet how all of us in this room and across the world eventually are like, I don't want to believe that anymore. And so I'm just going to go hunt down.
Yeah.
Like there has to be somewhere written another way
yeah.
to believe. And like mine was like 5 years ago. I was just like, gay, Christian, okay. And then, like, and then it
gay,
was...
Christian, okay, feet?
Did you ask Jeeves that?
Yeah, I did. Uh-huh. And Jeeves came back with a lot of material. And I was like, let's get into it and started reading about it. But it was friends of mine who like helped me, you know, begin to undo that and you're think welcome. It's okay and it wasn't you, but I thank you anyway.
We all had to come out to each other as queer affirming Christians.
It is actually a real thing, kind of.
Because I know people who still can't do that.
I think it might be okay.
Yeah.
I literally know like closeted just affirming straight people in the South.
Yeah.
And it's a very real thing.
It is a real thing.
And it's like out here it's so funny.
Yeah.
Like you know, like context is everything, friends.
Seriously.
Like we're just having I'm able to have different conversations because I'm here now than when I was in Atlanta, Georgia. Even in 2019, you know.
But I think it's changing there too. I mean, I don't know. I'm speaking of it. But I'm just thinking of we happened to talk to a listener in one of these episodes who is in, I think, Atlanta or in Georgia. Those are the same place.
He was talking about his church,
but he was talking about his church and he was like, you know, a lot of people think the South is still really backward and like really anti-gay or whatever, but in my church we're currently like changing our theology to allow for queer people, and like we're doing it together and everyone's on board and it's been contentious, but we're like figuring it out. I know, in my heart I was just like, okay, that's so good to hear. Yeah, like, I really want to hold on to it because it can feel like, oh, well, in LA, we're isolated. We feel safe to talk about it and we can do it. And like those poor people out there or whatever. But a lot
I know two great churches in Atlanta that I love that are affirming now. Vinings Lake Church and Park Avenue Baptist.
Check
them out. Yeah. I've never been to either one of them. I just know people and some of my old students now go to both of those churches.
That's cool. Yeah.
And I'm like, well, those are the spaces. That's where it is in Atlanta right now. So if you need that, I just want to put
passed on church clarity.
Yes, seriously.
Yeah.
PSA.
Church clarity.
Okay, so you were dating people and then figuring this out.
Working, you know, it's just all a hot mess. And then when you're a pastor, and then I was college pastor, and it's a relatively large ministry, you know, like, it's like, it feels everything is so public and so urgent. And so like, I'm like retreating from like people in public, like really like doing my duties, and then like in my bedroom, like just like hiding, you know, and working out my life. And I kind of go through that process. And eventually I start telling some of the people on my staff that I'm affirming. Most of them knew that this was a part of my life, a conversation we had had, but they knew that I was not affirming.
Right.
Not all of them, but most of them. And I started telling some people on staff that I was affirming. And just a couple months after that started happening, I was basically told I was no longer going to be able to stay at this church.
How?
Like in any capacity, not just like working there.
Just working there. Yeah, okay. Yeah. They're
How'd
like,
they tell you that, or who told you?
The lead pastor. Yeah, just over a breakfast as one does.
Just drop that on you.
Yeah, and it was.
Did it surprise you? Or
The answer is yes and no. It's interesting because I knew like instinctively that me starting to tell people that my theology was shifting meant something about what I was able to do here. But I didn't. And so like I felt that anxiety probably for those 2 months in between when I started sharing with some people and that conversation, you know, but I didn't know. Like I knew, but I didn't want to know, but I knew.
You're like, maybe they just will talk to me about it.
And I was already planning on like leaving and coming to finish my master's at Fuller anyway. So like I had already had some like plans. I just had like to move out here. And so, but I did not want to leave quite yet. And they actually said that like, you can stay here for the next year and like make your plans to leave. Which is, again, another complicated time in my life because, like, I said yes, by the way.
Oh, boy.
And so
oh, babe.
Yep. Yeah, I know.
Oh, man.
I'll receive a hug later.
Ouch. Wow. Yeah. Oh.
So that year, just knowing, I spent one more year there.
Oh, man.
And it was probably, like the hardest year ever. Also one of, like, the best years ever. Because what it allowed me to do is like integrate myself into my friend group and start coming out to people and like all these people that like I got to do the work with the people that I love instead of just like running away.
Yeah, and that's so, a good point. Yeah,
and I also got to like, I mean, to their credit, they some of the pastors at the church gave me a lot of space to like challenge them and to bring up my hurts with them. And they did not do it perfectly. But they did give me space, and so I was able to leave with some measure of, I don't just hate the guts and want these people to die, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I was able to leave with some measure of reconciliation, I mean, it came at a cost. I mean, that's a pretty traumatizing year, to be honest, of like being in a space that, you know, you're technically fired from, that you're, that you know, like if you were any more open and out, that you would be fired like immediately. Like you have to stay under, you know, like.
Wait, it's just, so you were still working for them technically?
Oh yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
But it was not like, but you like have a completely time bomb going
yeah.
down for
yeah, yeah.
You have
like,
a year
this is
to
coming.
Leave.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a long time they gave you.
It was. And
it's very strange.
There's some.
But
there's
I
want to
give them a little credit, but it's so strange.
I know. It's complicated,
it's
right?
So complicated,
it's none of this
yeah.
stuff is easy.
Because they could have done a horrible, even a worse thing would just be like, get out now, pack your stuff,
totally.
And don't come back.
Yeah, and they gave me that option. If they're like, if that doesn't feel good to you to stay, then leave. Like,
wow.
That's what's so tragic about a lot of this stuff, though, is because it's not the pretense of love. It's actual love that mm-hmm. they wanted to communicate to yeah. you and give to you. And, okay, this is difficult. I believe this. You believe that. And granted, my belief dictates like a value judgment on this big part of you and your life. But yeah. But even yeah. so, it's not an insincere love on their part. It's just like you can call it confused, misguided, mm-hmm. obviously problematic or incomplete. But it's not insincere. Yeah. So it's almost yeah. like, it's almost like when you talk about like, do you love your grandpa? Yeah, I love him. Is he racist? Yeah, he's kind of racist, you know? Where it's like, yeah. but it doesn't make his love for me insincere. So right. it is it's, messed yeah. up to navigate that stuff.
It's so hard. And it's, yeah, you can just get into all sorts of mind loops about what does it mean? What does it not
yes.
mean? And there's some like details that make sense for it to be like a year-long stay. Like there's a role I was doing, something I was starting, they wanted me mm-hmm. to finish. Like, you know, there's some more like pieces to this, and those are some reasons I said yes, is because I wanted to like finish out the things that I had started doing at this
yeah.
church.
Yeah, and
you
all
know?
The students you knew.
Yeah,
the student,
you know,
yeah.
so like it was it's never easy. Whenever someone says any of this stuff is easy, it's not.
No.
And it's not simple either. It's super complicated to do it thoughtfully. Now, you could just rip the Band-Aid off and, like, I could have, like, in that moment just gone on, like, Facebook and Twitter, like, I'm gay, bitches. Like, I'm out. See you in California. I'll have a six-pack, blonde hair, and be tan in 1 year. Maybe two.
One
we're
year.
Two, and we're, like, you know, we're, like,
close.
1.3
I'm
out of three.
Tony watch party.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
When you started to come out to your friends, did anyone surprise you by embracing you? And we're like, cool, no problem?
Yeah. Honestly, at that point, so remember I said I kind of retreated for a while?
Yeah.
Well, I, like, found the people who I knew were like finding religion and Christianity problematic. And so like they had become my friends. So a lot of them still like were on the journey with queer kind of theology and understanding that, just because it's so in the culture in the South. It's so, so there. I don't know how to describe it. Even non-religious people. Mm-hmm. But nobody, I'd actually received like no hate from any of my friends. There are some people who were, I think, hurt a little bit that we hadn't like gone down this journey longer and more openly. Mm. But no one blamed me for that. They just like wish that they had that opportunity with me. Mm. And so, yeah, most of my friends that I had by the time I was coming out, like, were all chill and, you know,
yeah,
great and
that's nice.
Super helpful during that time. I mean, I would literally not be like a healthy person today if I didn't have the kind of friends I had back then.
Yeah.
I would be an extremely unhealthy, traumatized in that corner, like just like, you know, rocking. Like,
you'd still be here, but you would just
be
in that corner.
That corner specifically.
With a mic.
With a mic and crying
and
as
then,
I talk about this.
What about family
Gosh,
stuff?
I can
How
imagine.
Did that affect it?
Oh, yeah.
Family is, it wasn't a huge deal to my family. Like, there wasn't, it's not easy for them, but they're not super religious in that way, remember? So, like, they're not holding to any moral high grounds
okay.
of, like, you're going to hell or
right.
anything like that.
Great.
And so my older brother is gay. And I think that was his coming out story. I was young when it happened. He's 5 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't, like, fully, like, conscious of everything happening. Mm. I'm sure I've internalized some stuff from then, but I think that was a harder coming out process. And so by the time that I finally was having the conversation with them, they knew what to do and what not to do, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think some of it's hard for them, but then they're like, but I always will love you, support you, and I'll fight for you, all that kind of stuff.
That's
so
cool.
It's just hard for them being in it's just in Southern culture. It's like a
foreign thing, yeah, maybe for them.
Oh, so it's like so foreign.
I know this is a bad analogy, but if suddenly you were like, actually, I'm South African and I have been this whole time, and they're like, well, I just don't know what that's like, yeah, you know? And yeah. So like, okay, yeah, but what do you do?
Yeah, yeah. So
is that helpful?
Maybe.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's yeah, so they're fine, like they're accepting all that kind of stuff. It's, you know, it just is always hard to do that process of self-disclosure, even if you know they're not going to like hate you.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing. You don't have to be a hateful conservative person for anyone to be afraid to come out to you.
Sure.
You just have to have a relationship, and changing relationships is hard and it's scary.
Yeah.
Changing like how we relate to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. And of course the family ones where they've known you literally all your life.
Literally.
Mm-hmm. Are the most difficult by far.
Yep.
You can make pivots and like, especially the more recent the relationship is, the more kind of like pivots and moves you can make. But then, like, friendships are like 6 or 7 years old.
Yep.
And say,
oh yeah, the longest friends were the hardest.
Yes.
I was like, the longer I've known you, the less I want to come out to you.
Is that funny?
Yeah.
Where it should equal intimacy, but it actually just calcifies into weird malaise of apathy and just comfort sometimes, like too much comfort, so you don't want to rock the boat.
Yeah.
So how'd you end up becoming a pastor as you are now?
Oh God. So I moved out here 2 years ago, actually.
Like, this is recent. Okay.
This is recent. Okay. So 2 years ago, I arrived out here. And I was at Fuller Seminary. I took a summer. I got here for a summer. Yeah, R.I.P. in several ways.
Well, it's moving. It's not R.I.P.
Yeah. Alive and well. My husband Nate goes there right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's fun. He got his master's in theology there, and now he's doing the MFT.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so you might see him around.
All right. Yeah. I'll look out for him. Uh-huh. I'll wave.
Oh, wait, no, you're done. You're not going there.
But
anymore.
I'm there at the coffee shop all the time. Okay, so if he drinks coffee, I'll see him.
He doesn't, so I'm sorry.
Okay, well, I won't see your husband.
He doesn't drink coffee, does he?
Really? No.
I just noticed that.
That was weird.
Oh, that's sad.
How unobservant.
We have a difficult marriage.
All those missed antioxidants, you know, like that's a missed opportunity.
That's his number one fault.
I'm sleepy.
Yeah.
There's a fix for that. You can change it.
2 years ago, you come out.
So I move out here, go to Fuller. I take a summer just to like whatever church. Didn't do anything. I'm just living my own damn life.
Is that nice?
Oh, it was so great. I went to the beach like twice a week. I hiked like twice a week.
You were thriving.
I was living my best life that summer.
Yeah.
And then I was like, all right, now I've got to like get this master's. And so I finished my master's and started going to New Abbey right at the end of that first summer out here. I found it beautiful.
Was your
church.
Goal in mind to still be a pastor eventually?
Not at all.
Oh,
no.
It was just like, I want to learn and figure this out?
I was considering doing PhD to become a professor.
Oh,
so I was like,
okay,
well, at least I can train the next generation of pastors to like think healthily about the Bible.
Oh, you'd be such a fun professor.
Right? Yeah. That's what I thought too.
You'd be people's
fave. I'd
bring
snacks and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Well, Professor Snacks is back at it again.
Professor Snacks. You can call me that still.
So,
I would like that nickname.
For context, New Abbey Church is a church in the Pasadena area.
Pasadena.
That how long has it been around?
Probably around 6 years now.
Mm-hmm. And it is it's explicitly queer affirming. It's co-pastored by a straight white man and a queer woman of color.
Yeah. Yeah, Caroline's thumbs up.
You're not here. Killing it.
Yeah, but that was an important dynamic because what I promised myself is I would not go to a church where half of the pastoral staff weren't either women, people of color, or queer people.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you just had to have at least two of the three of those in there for half of the pastoral staff. It's very specific.
I know what you're saying, though, because like, I'm giggling because I'm thinking of churches I've gone to, and then, like, we'll screen cap.
Yeah.
I will screen crap all over.
Screen crap.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like, just like the about us, meet the staff.
Yeah.
And it's just like a beautiful melange of
white
beige
families.
Five straight whites,
Caucasians,
yeah.
And then all the women are coordinators and administrators
and
somehow.
Directors, maybe.
Directors.
She's an office manager.
God. Oh man, yeah. That drives me insane.
So yeah, like that dynamic, I was like, I was not going to go to a church that didn't have a ton of diversity on the pastoral staff explicitly there.
Because you can say we're egalitarian or we're affirming or whatever, and then somehow you still manage to have just a lot of white dudes doing the same thing.
Doing the same thing.
Can I tell you, like, my first impression when I went to New Abbey was Corey came out, and I was just like, God damn it. Like, you're fucking kidding me. Like, back here. I was like so pissed.
This tearing, kill him ass motherfucker.
I know. I was like, I know this guy. I've seen him everywhere. And I was just like, I was like so shut down. And then he started talking and I liked him. And then also, what's her name?
Britt
came out too. And I was just like, all right. All right.
All right. We're back in the game. Yeah. I don't know if I've told Corey this, but I like avoided Corey like explicitly for like 5 months. Of going there.
Yeah, because
I did not want to talk to him.
Because he felt like the guys you knew in Old Church.
He looks like he could bully you.
Yeah. He has a very, like...
I love you, Corey. I know you love
and it's
us.
So, I know, it's all, like, surface stuff or whatever.
Totally.
All
what love,
you
see. All love.
And even just, like, his energy is very, like... Yeah, you were probably just, like, handed a leader position at birth, you know, at whatever church you were in. I'm just, like, charismatic and, like, funny and loud and, you know, like, with the right hair.
And so it was...
I don't have any...
She has no feelings.
I have
about
no
this
feelings
at all.
Whatever. I'm not bitter at all.
But like because of that dynamic though, like again, it's all surface. It's all the, you know, that kind of stuff. I just was like, I don't want to talk to this dude.
That's so funny.
And I like talked to Britt immediately and we got a beer like 1 week later. and then I was like, so I'm going to like let Britt be my pastor. And I'm going to bring my friends here and I'm going to have like, yeah, it's just going to be great. And that's what we're going to do. And, so I started, but I mean, it was fantastic. Corey is fantastic. He's been the person who's probably offered the most like support in my healing journey of like coming back around to being a pastor. And he's the one that like called it out in me when we finally did actually like have a conversation. I was like, I guess I won't avoid him today, you know, like six
today's
months later.
I can do it.
Or four
I can
or five months
him.
Later. I don't know.
It's fine.
And he said, I heard you were a pastor before. Tell me about that. And so I told him about that. And he's like, well, my goal is I think that everyone who needs a new abbey should be able to find one. And I want to plant more churches. And I'm looking for people in our community who embody the values of our church to lead those communities. What do you think? And I was like, panic attack, see you later.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
I mean, I like played it cool. I'm like, oh God, yeah, that's really interesting, Corey. I'm really glad you're talking to me about this. I'm going to go now. And then I had a call, like everybody. I'm like, oh my God, I just had this conversation.
Because
I have so many feelings.
Just jumped out of the frying pan.
I know. But like, there's something right about it as well. Because as I was even going there, I was like, God, I always wanted a community that felt like this. And as I've been in there, I'm like, I wonder if one day I'll be able to lead a community like this. Still thinking I'm on this PhD route. And so like it resonated. And that's what was a scary part. If it didn't feel right, it wouldn't have been scary, right?
Yeah.
And so because it felt there was something very instinctual there, I was like, well, let's talk in a month or so, you know. And I worked it out with my friends and therapists and just started going down this path. And he gave a very long discernment period. We spent an entire summer kind of discerning if this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And see like if he even is like, well, I also need to see if like I want to work with you. You know, like if I'm going to say like you need to be a pastor of the church, that the first church that we're planting, like I need to trust you. Mm-hmm. And so we went down that journey together and with Britt and now my co-pastor, Chris Lopez, who's a fantastic human. And we're planting a church in North Hollywood, New Abbey, North Hollywood. We're meeting.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, we're meeting every week now.
Oh, this episode is brought to you by New Abbey,
North Hollywood.
Oh my gosh. Da, da, da.
We meet every week as a core group. I mean, it's like people who are wanting to like be the kind of the engine of the church or the rowboat, if you will.
Okay.
That's what we always say at New Abbey is we're not a cruise ship. We're a rowboat. And we need everybody to be participating in this because it's your diversity, what you bring to the table that makes us who we are. Mm. And there are people who are coming out of traumatized spaces in churches. And like, if you need to lie on the deck and let us row for you for a while, please do that. And that's what I did. But when you're ready, it's who you are that's going to be the engine of our church.
Yeah.
Mm. Which I think is beautiful.
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it.
And so
you don't have to be especially qualified.
You're just
who you are is helpful.
You're who you are. Mm-hmm. Who you are. And all of your queer glory or your female glory or black glory or Asian glory, whatever that is. Like, that is what we need at our church because we're missing something without you. Mm. You're just a different shade of the divine.
And I think it's a really interesting space, too, in which, of course, growing up, as we all did, in church communities where the ones who are thriving are kind of me, you know? Like, yeah, you're Corey type. So it's like kind of charismatic and a white guy and whatever. So it's so funny to like visit and enter into a space where I think the people that are most empowered is like you see a lot of queer people who don't have to hide themselves in any way or like dissolve parts of themselves. You see a lot of women that people are not going to tell to be quieter in any meaningful way.
Or like dress more modestly.
Yes. So it's like, so like it's weirdly, it's almost like the straight white man is not a minority in the church, but it's not like the foremost like or logo of it.
It's been decentered, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing,
is that we're no longer saying that this is the center of faith. Mm-hmm. And it's contained in this body.
Yeah, or this is Christian default. And comes around.
Yeah, and everyone else is just a different shade of this default.
Right.
Which is a really, it's so interesting. That's a very old way of thinking. Like ancient times, they used to think that there were like men and then not men.
Yeah.
And there were like slightly lesser men. Yeah. And that was women, what we now know as the female gender. Like there wasn't like two genders. It was just like you were a man or you were a lesser man.
Or not. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, isn't even that in Genesis too? Like she's from him. She's like a piece of him.
Yeah.
Or something, rather than her own.
I mean, ish is in Hebrew, ish is like man. And then isha is woman, but it technically means like. Like his, like the man's or whatever.
Oh
it could also be like husband, and then like so it's like the husband. So the wife would be what the husband's possessive. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's so like it's just so baked into because
like
that's
right
how
there.
People understood gender for so long. Yes. We did not always understand gender as a binary.
Nope.
Like way before we understood, we had any idea of a binary. We thought it was a single gender.
Wow.
And they're just different shades of that.
Interesting.
Like, it's crazy.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Amazing what happens when you like start looking at trends. But we still hold to that thought in a lot of spaces that man is default. Like that hasn't completely gone away.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the idea that like straight white male perspectives is like, okay, so that's normal.
Right.
And then anything else is like
contextual theology.
Yeah. It's like diversity.
A different personality.
Yeah.
I mean, like take pop culture alone. Like how many comedies are just now having women be the lead?
Yeah. Or you guys saw Endgame, right?
Yes.
I mean, this is coming out in like, so like we're past spoiler time.
Okay. Spoiler alert.
The
freaking
scene of
where
women.
All the girls were together.
Yeah, she's not alone. Fuck yes.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I was a little bit like pandering, but also.
I know. I had the same. I was like,
You had to because
I was like, logically,
just had a female superhero movie, but whatever.
I was like, logically, these women wouldn't necessarily all be next to each other in the battle at this moment, but I'm like, damn it, I love it anyways.
Like,
and that's what I said on Reddit.
Symbolism is amazing.
If you look at the logic of that, it doesn't make sense that Captain Marvel would.
Battle theory says it doesn't make sense that you put all your swords in one place.
The Art of War declares. That.
And, you know, men have more upper body strength. It's scientific.
Did you guys go into a deep dive on Reddit on like, people?
I don't
like,
deep dive Reddit at all, yeah.
It sounded
it's
like
dark
you...
dark place. No, I can just put
just
that hat on for a little while.
Put your
You'd be
straight
great
white
on
male
Reddit.
Redditor hat.
Yeah, I got it right here.
I feel like, Caroline, you would thrive on certain Reddit communities.
Oh, my God. Can you please?
I don't think so. It's too late.
No, I think it's too late for me. You could get
Never
on some Grande
late.
Reddits and really share hot takes, Rihanna Reddit.
Spout off on those.
The Riri Reddit.
I mean, I've only been to New Abbey three times, so it was great. It was like two at services and then the Easter service.
Are we doing a Yelp right now?
Yeah, and
I've been three times.
So now you've been three times.
Stars.
Have you considered tithing and giving back to the community?
And also, I guess I'm leading a Bible study now, and I'm so stressed. But to your point of what we were just talking about, it was so nice to go there because, like, for a little while, like, my husband was a worship pastor at a pretty conservative mm-hmm. church in Sierra Madre, and then before that, we were going to Reality LA. And then we went to a couple other places. And so to be at New Abbey, and like I'd sought it out, like, because I knew it was affirming and it was like mm-hmm. this certain community, but to actually like see it and be among those people and to see, yeah, like openly queer people, hands up, worshiping all out and just being who they are and dressing the way they want to, was, I was just surprised. And I know it's just an obvious thing, but I was surprised at how like moving that was mm-hmm. to be like, oh my gosh, we're all here. I'm not especially privileged over this person. And yeah. like, I don't have to worry about them not getting to participate. We're like, we're all here. And yeah. so it was so powerful.
Yeah, I cried my first time there. It was just, it was amazing.
I was just like, what? we can be open about it. We're all cool.
I think too, it's probably another weird analogy, but I think for so long and for a certain amount of time, we probably all experienced a modicum of this via the internet.
Yes.
Specifically, and it was just like theoretical or as parasocial. It wasn't something that was like tangible and real and literally the person yes. you're holding hands with next yeah. to you. So then to see that tangible embodiment of it is, it would be hard for it to yeah. not be moving
yeah,
on some level.
Yeah, my connection to that was Twitter. Like I curated my Twitter timeline to be voices of people not like me and yeah. And my friends' voices as well, but like I started following people friends. Who were challenging me. And yeah, I don't follow you. I'm sorry, buddy. I will after. This is just, I had to confess it. I felt so convicted. I couldn't pretend.
Get out. Get out.
But I mean, that was it. And so like when something would happen, I would like go to Twitter and be like, oh, how are these people processing it differently than my white ass, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was super helpful. Like I just got to learn and just, like, understand that the way that I see the world is no longer default.
Yes.
Like, it's just a way to see the world. And so, but yeah, but now I'm actually touching those people. Like, I'm holding their hand every Sunday and celebrating that I'm different than them and that they're different from me and that we're all a part of this larger thing called life and humanity that was a good gift from God.
Oh, man.
And we just get to participate in that reality.
Yeah, it's very special. It's yeah. sad it took so long. You know?
Right,
it's
I know.
It's so sad.
Like, I'm 30. It's taken me...
It's taken us so long.
Taken me, like, 27 years before I experienced a community like that.
I know. But we're here.
Yeah, but we're here now.
It. Yeah, so it's good. But yeah.
Yeah, and everyone's at their own pace, so, mm-hmm. you know. Because all the stuff before, it's all a part of it.
Exactly, you yeah. know? That's why it's a complicated relationship.
It's hard to reconcile.
You know? I would not be here without all of that stuff.
I wouldn't mm-hmm. have cared so much about this
yeah.
had I not had the opposite viewpoint for so long
yeah.
that I felt strongly about.
I wouldn't be working to create queer spaces for queer people in the church had I not been excluded. Now, that doesn't ever, you know, I was in the church, but, you know, that part of me be excluded, I
yeah,
should say.
Yeah.
That doesn't excuse, it doesn't mean we actually, like, you know, perpetuate
great.
Harm
yeah.
intentionally
right.
so that one day they're, you know, we don't do that, but we just recognize that that was a part of it. And that's why,
yeah.
and we're all working this thing together. This thing is going somewhere. So.
Yeah.
Hey.
So cool.
Hey, well, thanks for sharing.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
Stars.
Yeah,
thank
I know.
You too.
And I know there's like so many other little parts of that God. That you had to skip over.
Guys, we went from Exodus to Ariana for like a good 10 minutes. And I have to say, that's a highlight of 2019.
Guys, kind of like Captain America, we could do this all day.
Oh my gosh. And we've all got great asses.
Yeah. I did.
That's America's
we
ass.
Did, we did have questions for a pastor written down. My first one is, so the Bible. What?
Kevin was typing these aloud as we were getting ready. I was like, that's a good one. Write it down.
Oh, God.
The Old Testament. Why so serious? The resurrection. Come on. Right. So feel free to address those.
Speak to that.
Wait, what? I will say before we close out, because we do need to wrap this one up and then maybe get to the...
Man, get your chocolate off my couch.
Okay, for the listener at home, it's a candy bar. It's not anything else.
Shit.
It's my shit. What is your perspective generally on the Bible? Like, what is your field of interpretation with it?
Whew.
Real quick.
Yeah, yeah. I'll do that in 30 seconds.
Yeah, we're about to leave.
I think the important thing is, and I believe this is a Rachel Held Evans tweet, that I think about often is we don't have to cede the Bible to fundamentalists. The Bible deserves way more than that. I heard a recent podcast interview with Nadia Bolz-Weber and Pete Holmes on the You Made It Weird podcast. Highly recommend that interview. And she talks about the Bible is like a very powerful weapon. Look where it's gotten us right now. And it's too powerful to put it in the hands of a singular person, a straight white male. Like that needs to be that weapon. I mean, it's so interesting. Even the Bible talks about itself as a weapon, and we use it in very spiritualized terms. But the reality is the Bible shapes culture, and we have to learn how to hold on to it and all use it well, healthily, interpret it well, because we can't just let that be in the hands of one person, or it will be used as a tool of hurt and oppression.
So what you're saying is like the Bible are like the soul stones and the time stones and the spirit stones, and that if Thanos puts them all in one glove,
it's too much
power one person.
But when they're spread out
to various communities
and they're all able to use it to do their respective parts, then those stones are helpful. They're in their right hands. We cannot let Thanos have all of those stones. We cannot let one person have control of the Bible.
No one man should have all that power.
Know how to use this thing well.
Wow.
Take me to church, y'all.
We are in church.
I feel that.
This is my church.
Oh my gosh. Okay, let's wrap up on that.
You're my favorite, Caroline.
You're my favorite. I'm so glad you're right there with me on that.
It's the best analogy I've heard recently.
Good grief.
The Infinity Stones are the Bible.
And
put that down. Write it down.
Okay, yeah. Next week. We're going to have Darren back, and we're going to talk about the Enneagram.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
And talk about whether it is just astrology for Christian nerds. Darren, thanks so much for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you, too. You're awesome. Fantastic.
We'll tune in so next fun. Week when we'll do something different. Bye. Black card is my business card away. It be setting the tone for me.
Oh my gosh.
Is that the most proud of yourself you've ever been?
It's the thought. I like couldn't wait for you to finish your sentence because I was just like...
That was a HeadGum Podcast.